And so, again, the question, what is it that Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer is trying to teach us about Sefer Yonah that is over and above the understanding, the normal understanding that we've had of Sefer all along, whereby Sefer Yonah is what we read on Yom Kippur for Mincha, and it teaches a lesson, many lessons actually, not just one, about Tshuva. It teaches us about a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Erech Apayim V'Rav Chesed. It teaches us a lot. What is it that we are suddenly trying to put into this mixture? Problem? No, okay. Just wanted to make sure. Is the air conditioning on here?
Yes.
Well, yes.
I hear it, I know. It's,
it's very warm about
it. It's very, yeah, it's very muggy in here.
Yeah.
At any rate, so I want to start from the beginning a little bit. I want you to know, seriously, this is not false modesty. I will not do justice to this very wonderful work of Rabbi Bless, because it's really over and beyond amazing. And if there's anybody that wants to take time and ponder, and it's only in Ivrit, otherwise I would force it upon you, Rennie, because you probably would understand it, if not for the language. But the Sefer is so overwhelming and wonderful. And he's really dealing with the essence of the world and why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world and what it was that was Yonah's task, Yonah of all people, what it was that was his task that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent him on when he said to him, Kum, right? Get up and go, Ninveh Ha'ir HaGedola. Remember, we started with an emphasis on that, Ir HaGedola. So let's go back. The Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer started with Yom Chamishi, right? And all of the things that happened on Yom Chamishi. Why are we going back to Sheshet Yimei Bereshit? What is the reason for, if we're learning Yonah, why are we reminding ourselves about Sheshet Yimei Bereshit? So let me ask you a question. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create a world? I mean, this is a very small, simple question, you know, nothing too deep. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kiviyachol decide to create a world? What did he want?
Is that a rhetorical question?
No, I want an answer. It's not a rhetorical question at all.
It's a very apropos question for what's going on right now. This Stephen Hawking, who died, what did he say? He said the world is going to turn into a black hole. He was the
expert on the black hole.
Well, the world was created so God could give the Torah to the world so that people could observe his Torah. That's why there's a world.
That's why there's a world. Now make it more general. You're right on mark. I want you to make it more general.
I think we would say that it's Hashem, for his reason, wanted to have a relationship that with something that would be not his equal, but something that he could feel a relationship with. I just think of this in connection. Just want to make one comment that Rabbi Wein has just finished a series of three shirim on Shir HaShirim, and the main point.
Shir HaShirim. I want to teach that too.
It was just something extraordinary, and the main idea, the main concept is Hashem, for his whatever his reason, wanted to have a relationship with something and created human. Created the world and created human beings.
A relationship. So Hashem wanted to create a thing in which there would be people, in which there would be human beings with whom we could have a relationship. Now put the Torah idea into it. Let's get it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create a world.
To show who he was. To sort of appreciate that there's something above us. Something in a higher level that is there, that
Yeah, no, we're getting very close. So let's start piece by piece. So Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create a world so that there would be on it.
How about to do good?
That's very good. Now, see, that's when I said that I wanted you to make it more general. So let's use a normal word that normal people use. In other words, not necessarily Jews is what I'm saying. When I say normal people, I meant the general, not normal. The general population. What would they use, they would say, to create a just society? By the way, that's not what he said. It's the word that I came up with, right?
Then you have that problem of tzaddik v'ra lo.
I'm not getting into that at all. I mean, we'll touch upon it, but right now, no. Right now, we're not up to that yet. We're up to the point where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by the way, he said, Yehiyahu, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to create a world in order for there be a place for a population that would be able to live according to rules and create a just society so that, and to praise the Kodesh Baruch Hu when you said to recognize that there is a greater being to create a just society under God. It's like one nation under God, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance, those of you who are Americans, it's like very much, right, with liberty and justice for all, that whole business. So well, our founding fathers really wrote very nicely in America. They probably don't say it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Not in one nation under God.
They took that under God out a long time ago.
To live according to
a set of rules that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to the world. Because I'm making it bigger, I wanted to shev a mitzvot b'nei Noach and the Torah. Okay? I want you to remember, please, that every step of the way, we have Hashem saying, if you look in Parshat Bereishit, every step of the way, right? Vayarat Elokim et Haor Kitov, right? Remember, every day it says Kitov. In other words, everything that's in the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the Rambam says, the Mitziyut, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, what we find in the world, is Tov. It is Tov. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was happy with it. He was pleased, right? When he saw what he created, he said, it's Tov. This is the way he wanted it. In other words, whatever we see in the world, whether it be the negatives, whether it be the things we're not so sure about, bugs, you know, things that we're not so sure about, whatever we know, what we know is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, it is Tov, right? That is Tov.
It has a function.
It has a function.
That's why bugs are good. I don't like them, but it has a function.
It has a function in the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. Ah, so now we have to go to the fifth day, where the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer came in on the fifth day. Why the fifth day? Not before the fifth day, but it started with the fifth day, because the fifth day is the first day on which there is actually a Nefesh Chayah. Something that is able to move, not just grass. In other words, grass also lives, but in a different way, right? There's the inanimate, and then there is the plant, right? The plant world. And then, of course, there is, we start with that which has movement.
Animal
that which
world.
Is the animal world, but I want the fifth day is the birds and the fish.
The
so it's before. So you have the fifth day, which is the birds and the fish, and you have... I have to get my outline. Wait, I had to make an outline last night because I knew I would just mess it up. And then, of course, you have the sixth day, which is the animals, right? And then is man. Glasses. So basically, just a sec. I don't want to mess up. Okay? We went backwards. Okay. Notice every day he said Kitov, etc. The fifth day, what is unique about the fifth day?
I think he said Kitov.
The fifth day, every day it's Kitov.
Maybe in the fifth day,
yeah.
Too?
Tuesday is twice.
The third day is twice. But what is it about the fifth day? The fifth day is very interesting. Because the fifth day, remember, it was Yishritzu HaMayim. Everything is Mayim. And the Mayim Yishritzu are supposed to swarm with that which flies up in the air, like birds, and that which goes deep. That we said a lot of times, didn't we?
Yeah.
And somehow we get the idea that flying up in the air is flying towards the light, right? And light is good. And going deep into the ocean is going far away from the light. And going far away from the light has like a negative, more of a negative connotation. Danger, a little bit of destruction, a little bit of fear, and we're afraid of that kind of thing. And then, of course, there's the sixth day when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the land animals. And then, of course, he created man. And man is supposed to be, so to speak, the manager of this universe. Interestingly, when we talked about going back to the fifth day, the Medrash, Pirkei D'Rabbi Eliezer, did mention that there is a bird that goes up and that is also permitted to be used on the Mizbeach. It's called a Yonah. Right? And when we go down into the depths, we were told that there is a very large creature that is sort of king of the ocean, and it is called the Leviathan. And all we know is that we read in the Pirkei D'Rabbi Eliezer that Yonah had an additional mission to the mission that we know about, it would seem, because he told the Leviathan, if you remember, when he was in the belly of the fish and the fish said, don't you know that today I'm going to be eaten by the Leviathan? Yonah said, take me to him. And then he said to the Leviathan, I came down just to see exactly where you live so that I will know it. I'm going to mark X. Marks a spot. I know where you live because it is my role to come down at the time of Mashiach, right? At the time of Yeshua. And I am going to slaughter you and feed you to the tzaddikim. And they're going to be sitting and eating Leviathan when they're sitting in the sukkah shell. Oro, the skin of the Leviathan. It's really interesting, because when I decided last week that I was going to orally do a summary, when we were learning last week, it was then Shabbos, and I was standing Shabbos in shul, and you know that on Rosh Chodesh you say Baruch Hi Nafshi.
Yes, and it says it.
And I couldn't believe it as I was reading the Baruch Hi Nafshi, because it was really a summary of what we've just talked about. And it is so utterly beautiful. I'm not going to do the whole thing because we would need two class periods to really understand even parts of Baruch Hi Nafshi, because only David HaMelech could start a Tehillim that says, Baruch Hi Nafshi et Hashem. My soul, please my soul, bless Hashem. Hashem Elokai, Gadal Tama'od, Hashem my God, you are so great. Hod v'hadar lavashta. Gorgeous, no? Hod, glory, and hadar, beauty. Hod and hadar are very close. We can do a shir on that. Hod is inner, and hadar is what you see, the reflection that you see on the outside.
Also, then we're really all beautiful.
And we're all beautiful. All God's creatures, right? We just talked about that. You have clothed yourselves, yourself in Hod Vahadar. And it's then telling us, Ote Or Kasalma, you put on light like a article of clothing. Note Shemayim Kiriyah, you pull the heaven like I do my curtains, right, in the morning when I want to open them or close them, when the sun is coming in. But it's really interesting because it does, right at the beginning when he's discussing creation, there's a lot about water. Right away in those first few psukim, Hamakare Bamayim Aliyotav, he builds the layers in water. Hasam Avim Rechuvo, I love that, the image. He makes the clouds, he makes the thick clouds into his chariot. It's such a beautiful thing. Hamahalech al kanfei ruach. He walks on the wings of the wind. And then he says, I'm looking for one particular, yes. when he's talking about the water in Pasuk Tet, and you don't need to follow because I'm not going to do it all. I can't. He says, Gvul Samta. He made a gvul for the water so that it shouldn't pour over. It says, Yalu Harim Yerdu B'Ka'ot. If you let water go alone, it just goes up, it goes down. It goes wherever. Water has no form, right? It just takes the shape of wherever you let it go to. Gvul Samta Bal Yavorun. So you said, listen, water, you can go to here. And that's it. Bal Yeshuvun L'Chasot Ha'aretz. So that they don't return to cover the earth. So, you know, there is, when we talk about Vayavdel on the second day of creation, then there is an interesting medrash that talks about the fact that that the water didn't want to listen.
They say that it happened. That's what caused a machloket. That's what causes a machloket, the fact that he divided.
Oh, because division is machloket.
Once you divide, it was whole.
Oh, interesting, yes. But I think that the idea also is that you do have machloket coming into the world, or you have disobedient, even though water is inanimate and water doesn't think. But you have all kinds of tsunamis, yes. In other words, you have the idea that when the Rabbeinu Shalom decided to create a world in which he was going to put in a creature that had free will, right from the beginning there was a little shake-up, right? In other words, the world sort of had ideas of its own, if I could use that.
Teaching you Gvulot. Teaching Gvulot to the Adam.
Yes, of course it's all meant for man, definitely. But it's interesting that there's the desire to break through the gvulot.
So sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not.
Then I want to go, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not, yes. But we don't like gvuls. At any rate, I want to go to the ikar, for us, of Barchi Nafshi. Maybe for everybody, Ma Rabu Masecha Hashem. I skipped all the way down to Chaf. How great are all your actions, Hashem, Kulam B'Chochma Asita. You made them all with chokhmah, with wisdom. Mal'a ha'aretz kinyanecha. The whole earth is filled with that which you have made. Zeh hayam hagadol. And it's though as though there's a finger pointing zeh. You know, whenever you hear a zeh or a zot, right? Zeh, ma'aseh ha'menorah in the Torah. We read it recently. Point. This is Zeh Hayam Hagadol. Look at this. You've looked at everything on land. This is the great sea. Urechav Yodayim, broad. It is so broad and wide. Sham Remes Ve'en Mispar. There are creepy, crawly things in the Yam Hagadol, in the great ocean, that you cannot count. Hayot Ketanot, little creatures. Im Gedolot. Sham Oniyot Yehalechon. Their boats, aniyot. It's an amazing thing with the water. You know, Shlomo, David is talking about sham aniyot, that boats can go on top of the water. Shlomo says, when Shlomo HaMelech, who's the wisest of all men, says, there are three things that I don't understand, four, and they're too much for me. The first one that he says that he doesn't understand is derech ha'aniyah betoch hayam, but he doesn't say betoch. Be something hayam. It'll get to me in a minute. It'll come. Come on. Derech ha'aniya be. Anyway, the way of a ship in the midst of the ocean. He says, I don't understand how a big, heavy ship, and can you imagine if he would see an ocean liner today, or one of those ridiculous cruise ships that have 20,000 layers, and how can that go on water? How can an airplane go in the air? He says, Derech HaTzipor. He doesn't understand. Derech HaNesher. That eagle. He says, how could that big, huge creature go up? At any rate, he's now pointing. This is David. He's saying, look, this is that sea. where even where there's this miracle that the depths of the sea have all these creatures and there's boats, and yet the boats can go there. And you know what's the rest of that pasuk? Livyatan ze yatsarta lesachek bo. Livyatan ze yatsarta. This Livyatan lives there that you created to play with. Lesachek, to play with. And we all got a little confused, because on the one hand, that Pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer seemed to be indicating that the Livyatan is the sign of darkness, of all that which is far from the light, of all that which is far from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the furthest, right in the depths, and that Yonah had to go all the way down to the depths to see the place of the Livyatan, right? And we said, well, what is this about Livyatan ze yatsarta lesachek bo? And one of the things that Rav Blesk quotes the Maharal. The Maharal is wonderful, but I have trouble because he's too deep for me. And so I have to tell you on my level. The Maharal analyzed that idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu lesachek. And he compared it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, Ki Tov. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created even the Livyatan, which we're talking about the size of immenseness and darkness and untrammeled, you know, something that you can't control. And yet it is something, L'sachek bo, it is part of his world. It is part of the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created that he is happy with. That's the lesachek. It doesn't mean he's necessarily playing whatever games kiviyachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu would play. It's that Hashem is saying, yes, it's part of my creation. It's part of my plan. It's part of what I set into the world to see how the man creature that I created is going to use the world and my Torah, the rules that I set into the world, to create the best society. So that's the lesachek. It's that the Livyatan has a purpose. It's that the Livyatan is, in that sense, good, because it is supposed to be something that is a, I'm thinking of the word motivator, but I want something, a better word than that. It is a catalyst. It's supposed to be a catalyst for bringing good into the world. We are supposed to make that which is negative come close to the light. So I want you now to play a little word game with me, and remember that the tzaddikim are supposed to sit in a sukkah of Oro Shel Livyatan with an ayin and make it Aleph, the light of the Livyatan. And I'm not taking this from no place. I want you to remember that the Midrash says when HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Adam and Chava big day Or, that the Midrash says don't read ayin, but he made them clothing of light. Because that's what we're supposed to do. We are supposed to take that which might be negative, we're supposed to use it. It's a catalyst. It's something that should make us rise up. Make that which is not so good into that which helps us to lead the good life. Phew, okay. Now we take a breath, and then we go on to this. Absolutely. What do we say when Chas V'Shalom we have a death? There's a Baruch. Remember David, who when that baby died, the first baby he had with Bathsheba, after the baby died, he got up and he washed, and all of his servants said to him, what are you doing? As long as the baby was alive, you were crying and moaning, and all of a sudden you get up. And he said, if you remember, Ani holech elav, v'hu lo yavo elai. In other words, it's like, this is the way. God made the decision, right? He took him, and now I am going to him. He will no longer come back to me. It's like, yeah, Baruch. Exactly. At any rate, so what's going on here? What is this whole story? Thing one, Yonah is not only one of the two birds, the only two birds that can be karbanot. In other words, they have an intrinsic kedusha. But Yonah also is a miracle child, because he was the child that was brought back to life by Eliyahu HaNavi. So we have to remember that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a miracle, it's not... It has to be used. A miracle is a miracle. There is symbolism with Yonah being revived, because when Eliyahu brought Yonah back to life, there were a lot of people that were starving. It was not just this one son of this one widow woman that was starving. And the fact that he brings him back to life is a symbol that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bringing the nation, is giving the nation now life again, that he's not destroying the nation at that time. That promise... A second chance. Oh, God, yes. Yes, a second chance. And so Yonah is, remember, please, a miracle person. He is a person that was brought to life twice. Once by HaKadosh Baruch Hu from his mother's belly, and the second time by the Navi Eliyahu. And remember that the Navi Eliyahu is... He is this strange figure, right, that appears in different ways, that never died, that was taken from us in a chariot of fire, and that is waiting someplace in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's realm to come and announce the coming of Mashiach, right? Hine, Anochi Shaleach Lachem et Eliyahu HaNavi. I'm going to send him back to you. So Eliyahu is a sign of Yeshua. Eliyahu is a harbinger, is that the way you say it? Harbinger, not yet, of Yeshua. And he's the one that brought Yonah back to life. And Yonah ben Amitai, Amitai is the Isha Emet, right? The Isha Emet from Eliyahu. So he's a very unusual person, Yonah. He's not just this small sefer. Now, let's go to Ashur and Nineveh, right? Lechel Nineveh. And we kept on talking about Nineveh, Ha'ir HaGedola. Remember? The big, big. Something about it is big. It's interesting to me. I never realized before, but it was interesting to me now. It's a good thing that I get to teach things more than once, because otherwise I'd never know anything. So I have to teach them again and again and again. Did you notice that not once in Sefer Yonah is it called Ashur? It's called Nineveh. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pointing to what the Maharal and Rav Kook called the Niniyut of Nineveh. I thought it was a riot. The Niniyut. What's the Niniyut? Tanin? The snakeness. The depths. The Leviathan nature of Nineveh. In other words, why is Yonah sent to Nineveh, Ha'ir HaGedolah? Because it was a powerful city that was so satisfied with themselves. It was a city that was revving up to be the first empire that the world had ever seen. It was the capital of Ashur. That was this empire. They built up the first standing army. An amazing army. They built temples. They built amazing things. There's one thing, one time, we mention it, that Ashur is mentioned in the Torah. You know when Ashur is mentioned in the Torah? Way back when Nimrod, remember Nimrod? Built Ashur. He went and he built Ashur. And he built Nineveh, Ha'ir HaGedola. Ha'ir HaGedola, yes, yes. What is it? There's a medrash there. It's very interesting. Right after the Mabul. Oh, the Mabul is the water gone wild, remember? The Mabul, talk about an amazing thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu used, water! What had happened in the world? It had to be destroyed because it went into this depths. The whole world was in this depths of sin, of corruption, of immorality. That's what the Maharal was calling niniyut. In other words, going into the depths, the very depths of the water, the depths of corruption, you know, like fish. Fish swim around. They have nothing to do all day. They don't learn Torah. They don't go to school.
They're in school all the time.
They're in school all the time because they don't learn too much. An interesting thing about fish is that fish can reproduce any time, not like animals that are in heat only at certain times. But fish just can go being fishy. They just keep on producing more and more fish. And so it's interesting that a Kodesh Baruch Hu used a Mabul because the world had become a realm of niniyut, of things that are like snakes and Leviathan and creepy creatures and depths, away from the light, as far as you could get away from the light. And so there's a Midrash that says something very interesting. After the Mabul, what do we learn as the world started once again building up after Noah and his children came out of the Teva? They had children and they had all those nations, and suddenly all the nations get together and they decide they want to build a tower, Migdal. Migdal Bavel. Why did they want to build a tower? They wanted to get up and be like Hashem. We're going to challenge Hashem. We're going to go up to the heavens. And there's something very interesting. This is my idiot phone. I am going to ignore it. We'll ignore it. It stops after like a while. So at any rate, it's probably important, but that's okay. At any rate, we will catch it very soon.
This minute, you get $1 million.
If I called back this minute, then it would be somebody reminding me that I didn't give a tzedakah yesterday or whatever it was. At any rate, good, I'm glad it stopped. At any rate, hold on. Yeah, the Midrash says something really interesting. Everybody is building the Tower of Bavel, Migdal Bavel, and only one nation did not participate. And that nation that did not participate is Ashur. Ashur did not participate because it tells us at that moment that everybody's saying, let's get together and build a Migdal. If you look in the Torah, that's when Nimrod went and built Ninveh Ha'ir HaGdolah. So it's as though Ninveh, the house of the Nin, he's building the house of the Nin because he doesn't want to go up. He wants to go down. There's a positive and there's a negative that's going on here. On the one hand, it's very good that Nimrod, as the capital of Asher, did not want to participate in this challenge to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But on the other hand, there's a little bit of a negative because he said, who wants to go up anyway? Who wants to go up to the light? We are perfectly happy being fishy. Being down in the depths, being as far from the light, being like fish, just being immoral and having fun, doing whatever we want to do. Fish were good. Fish, no. Fish were good, they didn't sin, but he wants to get back to the worst part of the fish. Remember, we always say, don't mix medrashim. One medrash stands here. One medrash stands here. Do not. Unless maybe you're the Maharal.
Maybe we're talking about the fish that are mammals.
The Leviathan, the whales, the thing. Especially the Leviathan. Because the Nin is standing here for, like, Tanin. You know, like something large. At any rate, on the one hand, Ashur deserves some help because they didn't participate in the Migdal Bavel. On the other hand, they deserve to be redeemed because we learned that no matter what evil there is, we need to not eradicate but try to raise it and use it to make the world a better place. And that's why you don't see a Kadosh Baruch Hu sending any other Navi to any other nation to warn them ahead of time. Many of you came over to me last week and said that Moshe was sent to Paro, but it's different the way Moshe was sent to Paro. Mitzrayim was destroyed because they didn't let Yisrael out. It wasn't because of all the immorality in Mitzrayim. Whereas with Nineveh, Ashur, it's the immorality in Ashur. It's as though the Rabbon Shalom has to redeem Ashur before he can use Ashur as the tool that is going to destroy Malchut Yisrael several years, many years after Yonah, many years after the story of Yonah, which I am not going to figure out how many years right now, because I'll have to start counting on my fingers, okay? Yerava ben Yoash, four more kings, whatever. At any rate, the idea is that Yonah, who is like a bird that flies to the light, who is the descendant of Eliyahu, who is the person who, Eliyahu is the person that brings Yeshua, is sent to Nineveh in an attempt to redeem Nineveh, in an attempt that this will also work on Am Yisrael. Let's not leave that out of the picture. That Am Yisrael will be affected by the idea that this great nation turns around when one little Navi is sent there and does tshuva. And it's supposed to once again bring the world closer to the light. Yonah ben Amittai is supposed to bring the world closer to the light. Now, we'll go back to the story of Yonah, but we will need to get back to this point of the Midrash when we get to that enigmatic end. When we get to that end where, remember, Behema Rabbah, remember that funny end of Sefer Yonah, and you think that I shouldn't have compassion on Nineveh that's filled with all those people, Ubehema Rabbah, that very interesting end, when we will get back. We will go back to this. So basically what I try to give you right now, just a very quick, you know, summary is the idea that, oh, I left something out. Good thing I had my glasses here. The idea that Yonah is sent, it's a redemption. This whole story is a story of Yeshua. And that's why we read it on Yom Kippur. It's a story of Yeshua that could have happened. The thing that I left out that I looked down is the whole idea of, that's the whole idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying that Tzadikim will be sitting in a tent made of the skin of the Leviathan. That will be used. The Leviathan, which is here the negative, will be used to, again, to reach the light. And that when Yonah will bring, in other words, they're going to eat of, it's not just destroying, it says Lizboach, not destroying. He's not supposed to kill him, Laharog, but Lizboach, to feed the Tzadikim. In other words, why are we permitted to use animals only to eat, right, in order to maintain ourselves? He is going to use that as some kind of maintenance, food, nourishment. Nourishment for the tzaddikim, as they say, sit in the tent of the Leviathan and they eat of the flesh of the Leviathan. It's not going to be like a carbon.
In the Beth Mikdash, they don't use the skin of a fish, but they use the skin of the animals.
They're using the skin, you know, they're not eating it. They're sitting in it. Yes. I can't hear you. It's a very... Yes, I did say that. I said, because they didn't participate. Remember, we said there's a positive and a negative. They didn't want to rebel against the Ribbono Shel Olam. They also didn't want to. The negative is they didn't want to rise. I said, we want to stay down here. We're fine. Okay.
And you say that the others that built the Babels to get closer to Hashem, but they weren't going there to get the ore. You said that they were interested, and that's why Nimrod is against the ore of Hashem. They were going up there to build, to be against Hashem, to prove that they are stronger. So
there is a conflict. Nevertheless, the Maharal says that.
Don't mix with
Russia. No. The Maharal says that there's a positive. No, okay, let me try to explain it.
Because that's why it was destroyed. Why would you destroy it?
You know, there's a really weird idea of an Avera L'Shem Shamayim. It's really a weird idea. Avera L'Shem Shamayim. It's when somebody's really doing something wrong, but they really wanted to do it.
Esther Makah.
Oh, it's used. She's so smart. The Avera L'Shem Shamayim is used for Esther and for Yael.
Yael
and Esther. In other words, it's where you do something really bad, but you're doing it for the sake of heaven, for the sake of Am Yisrael, to save the nation. So this is that idea. In other words, what they were doing was really bad. They wanted to challenge HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but there was that idea of Aliyah. We can raise ourselves to challenge HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, built into the negative, there was a striving. There was a yearning. It's that idea of doing the wrong thing. Does anybody get credit if they do the wrong thing for the right reasons? Do you get any little checkpoint? You know, okay, you get a little teeny star.
So say you can't. That's why they have this. What's his name was on trial because he used tzedakah. He didn't put it in his pocket. He went and built Yad Ezra. That's using, you know, doing a bay ride, but using it. For
so he has a nice soul. Yes. Oh, that's very complicated. That's a very complicated question. Did everybody hear the question? What about Adam and Chava? You know, in other words, Chava, when she wanted a taste of the fruit, you know, if we just read the story, it's so cute. You know, here is this nice...
Blame it on the women. It's not so cute.
It's always the women. Because the woman is curious. The woman is by nature curious. In other words, when you think about the whole story of Gan Eden, it's absolutely the same idea. Adam and Chava, it's as though there's a whole midrashic thing about if they only would have waited till Shabbos, if they would have waited another hour, then they could have eaten the fruit. In other words, there's that whole strange side to it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, just control yourself, you know, for what was it? It wasn't even an hour because it was Bein HaShemashot. In other words, it's like... the whole idea, yes. So that was maybe an Avera L'Shem Shemayim, because maybe we could say that Chava wanted to improve her knowledge. She said, oh, if this will give me an understanding, it's Eitz Hada'at Tov V'ra, a tree that will give me the ability to discriminate between good and bad, and I can get it in one bite instead of going to college for years and years. Shortcut.
That's the word hard for something.
She was an Isha. It wasn't instead of going to college, it was instead of not having anything.
Okay. Let's just let it lie for a minute. I hope it'll bother you. I hope you'll think about it and that you'll have a lot of questions. Please understand that I probably will not be able to answer them, because it's more, this whole story that we've been telling, it's more an emotional, there's like an emotional feeling of what's going on. We're trying to reach something that's more, that's on a level that's very hard to put into a logical picture. it's a very large picture that the Ribbono Shel Olam is saying to Yonah, and now he's going to talk to him again. Okay, you took your trip, you saw the Leviathan, you know where he lives now. Let's go. So I'm going now to Perek Gimel. Okay? Yeah, we have a little bit of time. Vayhi dvar Hashem al Yonah shenit lemor. Shenit. Yeah, there's a very interesting thing about this shenit. I want to read it to you. Here. Vayhi dvar Hashem al Yonah shenit. I'm reading my best friend, the Malbim. Because usually the Malbim doesn't go on flights of fantasy. He makes it clear. He likes little words, you know? He likes... he says, Rav Yitzchak Abarbanel Katav Al Masha Katvu Chazal. He's quoting the Abarbanel, who is in turn quoting Chazal. Shesheinit Diberimo Lo Shlishit. That he spoke to him a second time, but not a third. In other words, he's picking up the fact that it wasn't necessary to write here that he spoke to him a second time. He could have said he spoke to Yonah again. There's an emphasis on that shenit. Shezeh muchrach mima shekatuv b'seder olam. It was forced. He had to write this because of what's written in the Medrash Seder Olam that counts out the years of the world. Sheyonah Mashach et Yehu Bishnat Nun Aleph Samach Bet Lebriyat HaOlam. We don't have to count out the years. He's saying we have to put Yonah in the proper historical context. We need to put him in the historical context. One of the things that we know about Yonah, remember we read it way at the beginning when we took the source material from Malachim. Yonah, though he is not mentioned by name, we are told that Elisha HaNavi, who finished the missions that Eliyahu did not complete, one moment, was commanded to anoint Yehu as king of Yisrael, which is a long time before this happened, because Yeravam ben Yoash is the fourth generation after Yehu. Yehu was anointed at a time that Achav's son was ruling, Yehoram. Remember Achav? With his wonderful wife, Izebel, who brought all kinds of Avodah Zarah, who brought the Avodah Zarah of the Asherah and the gods of Sidon, and made it the official worship of Malchut Yisrael. Who killed Nevi'im, who killed several hundred Nevi'im, Izebel. Yeah, he was very henpecked. He had a very hard time. Izebel, yes, it was Izebel who killed the Nevi'im. In other words, it was a very evil time. And Elisha, it says that Elisha sent Hana'ar Hanavi. He sent the lad who was a Navi. And all of the Midrash says, or Chazal all agree, the Na'ar who is a Navi is Yonah. He is the Na'ar that Eliyahu revived. The word Na'ar is used exclusively for him. And so, what the Malbim is saying is, we have to put him in historical context. The Malbim is quoting Abarbanel, who is quoting Chazal, right? Who say we have to put him in historical context. Hare haya miyom shehitchil lehitnabot me'a v'shtayim shana. In other words, it would seem that from the time he began having Nevuah, when Elisha sent him to anoint Yehu that he lived for 100, or he gave nevuah till now, for 102 years. V'lo matzanu lo nevuah acheret b'meshach hazman hazeh, ki im shtei hanevuot sheniba al Ninveh. And we don't, he kind of is not in our forefront. We don't see him in Sefer Melachim. There are just, he's mentioned once by name. He's called that Na'ar. And then we have this Sefer that is called after his name, Sefer Yonah, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we see it, spoke to him Shenit, twice. Mayadanu, right? All we could see is that did the nevuah stop from that time? Ra'oi haya lehayasot kein achar shehu na'atz et hanevuah v'lo ratza lemalot dvar Hashem. In other words, because of the fact that he disobeyed the laws, the rules of Nevuah now. What did he disobey? He tried to run away and not go.
An assignment.
And he disobeyed his assignment. And because of that, he was worthy. It says, Ra'ui haya. He was worthy that at this point, no more Nevuah.
But it could have been.
Yeah, but that's. Then, what happened between the 120 years in between?
In the 120 years in between, the question is, did he have nevuah or not?
If this says okay. That means that the first one was then, and he did what was supposed to do, and the second one happened.
Okay, he says, wait a minute, I have a little bit more.
Okay.
I'm afraid that I'm going to lose the place. Because my fingers are trembling from all this argument. For ye palay, and it's a wonder, you have to wonder, shehu soter et atzmo. The Abarbanel is soter, what do you call it? Contradicting himself, right? Masha katuv acharze, it's written after this, b'samuch, very closely, shenevuat yona al ninve haita sheishanim lifnei churban shomron, Shezeh haya bimei Hoshea ben Ela. Oh my God. We are now going all the way from, he was sent to put Yehu into power. I didn't take my sheet. Remember we had a sheet of the.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I think I have it.
I might have it, and it would be a big help. Yeah, I should have taken. Oh, see, somebody has it. I'm so happy.
This? You mean this?
The Malcha Yisrael. No, this is Yehuda. Last, here's Yisrael. You are so wonderful. Vivian, I'm so glad you're here. We are talking about, I'm looking at a chart. We are talking about, it says, Yehu, son of Nimshi, okay, who reigned after Yehoram, the son of Ahab. So far I was right before, right? Even without my sheets, okay? And he reigned approximately from 3056 in the Minyan, according to Briat HaOlam, 3045. And then you have Yehu, Yehoachaz, his son, Yehoash, Yeravam ben Yoash, who we know he gave Nevuah to. It's written in Malachim Bet, Perek Yud Dalid, that he said Yeravam ben Yoash was going to conquer, remember, return all the land. Hu heshiv et gvul Yisrael from Levo Chamat ad, in other words, it says in the words of Yonah ben Amitai Hanavi Asher Migat Chefer.
So that's like the second.
Wait, he's not counting that, is what's going on. So you have his son, then Yeravam. We have somebody called Zechariah, Shalom, Menachem, Pekachia, Pekach, Ben Ramalyahu, and then Hoshea, Ben Ela, the king that was ruling when Shomron was destroyed. We have Yehoram, Yehu, ruling, I made a mistake before, I read the wrong column, 3056 until 3187.
What?
Count it.
No, there's 130 years. Yeah,
it's a lot. It's too much. So let's say it was, what did he say? It was 6 months. Hold on, just a second. Yes? Wait a minute, he's contradicting. Let's say it wasn't until the end of the reign, right? It was 6 years before, we said. 6 years before. So subtract out 6 years. So it was 120 and we're taking out six. The imken niba od yud shanim, another 10 years, bimei Menachem ben Gadi, beit shanim bimei Pekachya b'no, and then he's counting out all the years, shalosh shaloshea, harei nimshach zman nevuato, kuf lamed zayin shana. Don't count now. Don't go back to counting. He's saying, if we really count that, he was a Navi for 137 years. V'gam halo nevuat Ninveh haita b'sof yamav. Wait a minute. The nevuah about Ninveh is the end of his days. V'eich Navi ra'aya mimashalo diberi mo Hashem kodem l'masezu. And how can we bring a proof that Hashem said he wasn't going to talk to him anymore? But he was going to get more nevuah from him. He says, wait a minute, I'm getting all mixed up with the time. When was the nevuah taken away from him? When he didn't want to go to Ninveh. Why? But it seems that he had nevuah many, many, many years before that. So basically, it's really very interesting. He ends by saying the whole thing is a riddle. In other words, he ends by saying everything that the Abarbanel says doesn't make sense. From two points of view, because I see that it's late, so I'm doing it orally. From two points of view, one, the time element, and two, the Shenit. And what the Malbim's conclusion is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Yonah more than twice. He spoke to him Shenit about Ninveh. Why is that important? Because of the Medrash that we are trying to understand. The big mission of Yonah, the huge mission of Yonah, is the bringing Yeshua to the house of the Nin, to Ninveh, because it was supposed to be a time of Yeshua for the world. So when it says, Ve'edaber Hashem al Yonah Shenit, he's giving a second chance on this Nevuah. The other Nevuot, remember in the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, it did tell us that he spoke once to Yerushalayim, he was sent to Yerushalayim, he was sent to other places, and people were calling him a Navi Sheker, all of that stuff. So Yonah, according to the understanding of the Malbim, Yonah was an active Navi for 137 years. However, we have no record except that two mentions. The one where he's mentioned by name, the one where he's called Hana'ar. There is no mention in the text of his being sent to Yerushalayim, none. That's all Medrashic from Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. But this Shenit is talking specifically about his mission, which was supposed to really bring Yeshua to the world at the time when Ninveh was just rising to be a major nation.
Wait, are you saying so, he was a very old man at this point?
Yeah. Old, that's what we think, but they lived very long years.
No, we don't know. We don't really know. We don't know. But it says 137, and it's an amazing figure. However, I'm going to do this Malbim with you in Mirtz Hashem when we come back.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. That's the point.